This is the OTB Television Network, a service of Capital District Off-Track Betting.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. Seth Merrow and Sully Crowdy. Sully, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. How are you?
Very good. I will alert folks out. I like to cover all bases, but I did hear on the way down here, wind warnings for the area today. So if you have one of those inflatable Santas out on the front lawn, yeah, anchor them down. Yeah. Or it'll be three blocks away, it sounds like. They were saying 40 miles an hour winds in upstate New York. Maybe through the later part of the afternoon. So, again, keep that note in mind. Some nice racing today. We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll have some handicapping. Remington Park winds up there, meet the Springboard Mile. That'll be tonight on the quarter after 9 our time. There's a nice field there. We'll talk about that in the handicapping segment. Woodbine wraps up their season today. But they're kind of stretching it a little bit. 16 races at Woodbine. They start at 1:30 and they end at 8:30 tonight at Woodbine. Knock wood, because they canceled partway through the card yesterday due to weather. So it looks like they're winding up the season just in time north of the border. But hopefully Woodbine can get in the closing day card. So we'll hit on some of that. And we'll also do some conversation on stakes from yesterday, some recaps. And then bottom of the hour, our friend Steve Bick joins us. We do the annual holiday book gift guide, and he tossed out some books for us to talk about this morning. If you have a racing fan on your holiday gift list, maybe we'll give you some suggestions. But also, Steve was at the University of Arizona Symposium on Racing earlier this week with the radio show, so I thought we'd get some recaps on what happened out in Arizona earlier this week. All of that coming up a little bit later on. But we'll kick things off, jumping in and doing some stakes recaps, because, again, some nice stakes action yesterday, particularly down at Gulfstream. But Aqueduct will kick things off. I said it on the handicapper's report. Talked a little bit about it with Dave Grenig yesterday in Racing Across America, mentioning this New York Stallion Series yesterday, the Great White Way Division. Boy, this was a nice race. I mean, they had a field of 12 after a couple of scratches, but, you know, pretty much all the New York bred two-year-olds that you would want to see in a $500,000 race like this. And it lived up to its billing. We're going to watch the stretch run here. Dream Bigger went off as the 6-5 favorite. I like that horse, had him on top. He's going to be the number 13. And just get snudged by number 10, Bank on Shea. Bank on Shea, to me, was also a player. Jason Service trainee. Had finished third last time to Dream Bigger, but was pretty lightly raced. Well, those two come down to the wire. It is number 13 and number 10 will make a move here to make it, as they say, just a little snudge at the wire. Running third was number 8, Captain Bombastic, for a Jeremiah Engelhart. So, again, a nice ding-dong finish that lived up to what was anticipated to be a nice race. And as they went under the wire and the photo was taken, it was Bank on Shea, number 10, over number 13, Dream Bigger. Chart margin and nose. Bank on Shea, Jason Service horse, some things to like, certainly. Lightly raced, career debut victory, third behind Dream Bigger last time. But again, that was only the second career start. Get $23 on that horse. I thought that was generous. Dream Bigger, again, went off as a 6-5 favorite. Captain Bombastic for Jeremiah was the 3-1 second choice. Munaki for Jeremiah Engelhart and Bill Parcells winds up fourth at 20-1. A generous 20-1 on Munaki as well. But a nice ding-dong battle. And I will add one thing, Sully. I said it yesterday when I talked about this during OTB Live. You saw the finish there under the wire where, boy, that was close. What happened there? I am recommending other tracks. I've been saying this for a long time. Tampa was the first one that had it. That stationary camera right on the finish line, where after a finish like that, they then pull up that slow motion replay where it just points right across at the finish line, and they're going. And once you saw that, you knew that Bank on Shea got the bob. You could see it very clearly. That's a great addition to the video production of a racetrack. I can't figure out why everybody doesn't do it. As I say, Tampa's had it for quite a while now, and I advocated as soon as they put it in. NYRA's had it for a fair while now, too, but I wish all tracks would put it in. It kind of puts a definitive look at that kind of a close finish that gives you, you know, so you're not sitting around waiting on pins and needles for the photo to be developed, but I hope all tracks get that. But when it was developed, it was Bank on Shea, Over Dream Bigger, clearly a couple of nice two-year-olds in the New York bred division. These were actually New York sire horses, but if you looked at the field, they all were New York bred. So there'll be a nice little three-year-old New York bred crop going forward, it looks like, when you look at a race like this.
Which is what you like to see here, because obviously New York is such a big, you know, here at OTB, we love New York, and a lot of players here, obviously in New York, and follow New York year-round. So when you have big fields for New York breds, it's a good thing, especially going into the three-year-old season. And obviously, they're not all going to stay in New York. They're going to try some other tracks. But it's just, it makes the state bred races that much more competitive. And as you said, Bank on Shea paying $23 for Jose Lascano and Jason Service, two guys that have had great racing years, but also in the last couple winter meets, Jose Lascano and Jason Service have had a lot of winners. So getting $23 there in a state bred race, I think that's more than a gift. And I think John Embriel, I don't know how he calls those races, because I don't know how you can see any of those numbers or the silks or anything like that. And then it's kind of tough to watch the race, because in the backstretch, they have the head-on view, and then kind of looks like Gulfstream Park West when they hit the far turn, because the camera's so low to the track. But yeah, it was a really good field, as you said. And local connections for Chowda coming in to this race and coming out of a win. And a lot of these horses have been competitive in New York throughout the entire year. And Munaki, when I was looking at the race, that was the same way. I'm like, this horse is going off 21-1. It's a Jeremiah runner, and Jeremiah's two-year-olds have been running extremely well in New York. So it was a lot better race than what you see at 8-5 with Dream Bigger and Manny Franco, Rapoli Stable. So you get Lascano and Service, you get rewarded with $23.
Yeah, you mentioned Chowder. It's Eddie F's racing. I went and had lunch at Eddie F's after Chowder broke the maiden a couple of weeks ago. Went in, had a lobster roll. If you want a lobster roll, no better place locally than Eddie F's up in Saratoga. And they were kind of lamenting there. I said, hey, were there free lobster rolls after the win the other day? Because the horse made $29. Everybody was kind of lamenting they hadn't played more in there. But I said yesterday, Chowder, it was a step up for Chowder coming out of the third place finish. But why not? You take a shot at $500,000 dollars. Ran sixth in the field of 12, and they've got a nice little New York bred themselves, Eddie Epson and Gary Siaka. So, again, they took the shot. No argument there in a race like that. But the Bank on Shea, Dream Bigger, Captain Bombastic, Munaki, again, some nice two-year-old New York breds, soon to be three-year-olds. So a nice three-year-old scene next year. And I can't go without, you know, Cleon Jones wasn't here because he went in the Remsen last week and didn't fare too well in there. But obviously, Tis the Law is the New York bred two-year-old that will be worth watching going forward as a three-year-old. But it seems like a good little three-year-old class on the New York bred scene. All right, let's go down to Gulfstream Park, because certainly it was a very good day of stakes action down in South Florida. Let's kick things off and just go chronologically. We'll look at the Sugar Swirl from yesterday. These are fillies and mares going a quick six furlongs. I said it yesterday, occasionally you just whiff, and I whiffed in this race. I didn't have Ladies Island in my mix. I had some notes next door. It was one of those where after the race, you know, you're looking at this, Ladies Island is number four horse here. It just makes it look easy. And after the race, I kind of, you know, said, what was I thinking last night when I left this horse out? It happens occasionally, and so I took the beating, but the connections look very good. Averill Racing and Company, Georgina Baxter trains, coming off a big win last time over at Gulfstream Park West, steps into the sugar swirl and gets it done, and had some nice stakes experience prior, some stakes wins. So this was a horse that had talent, in good form, had won at the level. As I say, I took a little bit of a shot against. I went with a bit of both for Jason Service, Michael Dubb and company. That horse went off as the 9-5 favorite. Wound up kind of a disappointing fifth in the field of nine, as there was prices underneath. Ladies Island, as I say, I left the horse out of the mix. The betting public made it deservedly, again, on the 2020 hindsight for me, to make the second choice at 3-1. But Meadow Dance at 8-1, runs second. Pretty Greeley, 73-1. The rank outsider winds up running third in their trifecta, 50-cent trifecta, $427. But as I say, I whiffed in here. Ladies Island looked fantastic.
Yeah, she really did. And if you go to every track, has a really, really good sprint rider. And you go off to Woodbine, Jesse Campbell's a very good sprint rider. In New York, we have Ricardo and Kendrick. And then Kentucky, you know, Ricardo goes from New York to Kentucky. In Florida, Esmael Jaramillo, he's a very good rider. He wins a lot of races, but he's a very, very good speed sprint rider when he has – he's a very good sprint rider when he has a lot of speed in a horse. He just gets to the lead and kind of runs away from everybody. And we've seen that multiple times in the early stages of the Champions Meet. And we've seen it at Gulfstream Park West. We've seen it the last couple of years in the Champions Meet and down in Florida and every other meet. So you got 3.5-1. You get $8 and change there. And obviously it was a little disappointing for the service runner and they're running fifth. But I think if you got speed in Jaramillo, it's something to look forward to and keep in your mind if you keep playing the Champions Meet down in Florida. Sprint race and the horse has a lot of speed and you get Jaramillo, sometimes you can get away with that price because he is dominant on the front end most of the time.
The guy to me that stood out from that angle over the past 10 years or so was Chucky Lopez in the winter over the inner track at Aqueduct. There is no more inner at Aqueduct, but when Chucky Lopez was on board of Speed Horse on the inner track in the wintertime, go to the window.
Right.
Sign me up. Jaramillo's a guy, though, that I hopped on board almost immediately when he showed up in South Florida. He's absolutely a talented guy. And, yeah, if you don't follow Florida racing normally and you're unfamiliar, he's clearly a guy with a lot of talent worth paying attention to through the winter season. All right, let's move on to the My Charmer, the only ungraded stake on the card yesterday. Phillies and Mares going a mile on the grass. Mitchell Road was clearly the one to beat and went off as the 2-5 favorite. I took a little shot, put that one right underneath, but I took a shot with Altea for Chad Brown coming off an allowance win up at Aqueduct. I thought it might be in good form right now. Altea was in the mix, the number six horse early, but it's the second choice at 9-2, winds up a disappointing sixth in the field of 10. But Mitchell Road, the Bill Mott runner, who again went off as the overwhelming favorite and looked to be the one to beat, turned out to be the one to beat here, grinds out a nice victory, chart margin, length and a half, a neck between the second place finisher, Take These Change, and third place, Munchkin Money. Munchkin Money, 6-1, Take These Change, 20-1. So you had a $2 horse on top, but with the $20 horse underneath, you got $28 for the exact. And then with the 6-1, Munchkin Money, who is another logical player in here, your 50-cent trifecta play paid $29. So again, there was a little bit of value for like those other horses underneath. There was potential to make a little bit of value despite a $2.80 horse. But Jose Ortiz on board, Bill Mott runner, looked to be the one to beat and then came down the stretch and won like the one to beat.
Yeah, Mitchell Road, I remember last Champions Meet, Mitchell Road won at Gulfstream for Bill Mott at a little bit of a price and then started running in these $100,000 stakes races. And the horse ran well, didn't win them all, but won a couple. And then on Preakness Day, forget the name of the race, but Mitchell Road was 6-1 on the morning line, went off, I think, closer to 2-1 that day. So Mitchell Road's a good horse, and we saw Mitchell Road up in the Diana. It was a little bit overmatched in the Diana this summer. But nonetheless, this is a horse that can win running quicker fractions, slow fractions on the front end. And if Mitchell Road gets the lead, he's tough to pass. So, you know, in a deep field like that, you never want to take a $2.80 horse. But he would, just class-wise, coming out of some really good races, won some really good races against good competition, seemed to be a little tough to beat, and he kind of held on against the 20-1 shot who made it interesting late in the stretch.
All right, let's move on to the Rampart Grade 3 event. Phillies and Mayors going the one-turn mile yesterday at Gulfstream Park. And it will be the number 4, Pink Sands, getting it done at 9-2 for Shug McGahee over the favorite number 11, Cookie Dough. I had Cookie Dough underneath. I wasn't as convinced as the betting public, but they made Cookie Dough the 9-5 choice. They had interviewed Stanley Gold on the simulcast signal yesterday before the race. He had a lot of confidence in Cookie Dough. Hadn't been seen since the end of the Saratoga meet. So coming off a little bit of a layoff, and you can see Cookie Dough is ahead here. But, boy, this is – you talk about a nicely timed ride. Jose Ortiz and Pink Sands get up right in the shadow of the wire. Chart margin, half a length. Cookie Dough ahead of Karen at 13-1. As the third place finisher, but as I say, a nicely timed ride from Pink Sand, who was coming out of a third place finish last time in the Pumpkin Pie up at Aqueduct. Shug got him ready, but more importantly, as I say, Jose Ortiz came from, I believe, was at, yeah, most of the race was in the back of the field of 10, and made the nicely timed ride from last place to first at an $11 even mutual. So a nice win early in the championship meet for Pink Sands, 4-year-old filly from Shug.
Yeah, as you said, Pink Sands coming out of the Pumpkin Pie, a winner up at Saratoga in a very, very good allowance race, and has won down at Gulfstream before. So, and as you said, perfectly timed ride by Jose. I could see why Cookie Dough would be the favorite, as the horse has ran well at Gulfstream, ran well in the GP Oaks, and actually ran, I thought, pretty decent in the Black Eyed Susan, I believe Cookie Dough went to. But I could see why the horse would be the favorite. But in those type of races, I'm not really willing to take a 9-5 in there. And Pink Sands, I thought, was a gift at 4.5-1, yeah, and got the job done from off the pace. So I'm not arguing why Cookie Dough was the favorite in there. And a little bit off the layoff, maybe Cookie Dough just needs one. We haven't seen, as you said, since August up at Saratoga. But nonetheless, very fair price for Pink Sands coming out of some good races in New York.
Multibello was the disappointment. Went off as the second choice at 5-2, coming out of a really nice win for Ian, yeah, Wilkes up at Churchill. Winds up ninth in the field of 10. So there was the disappointment there. With the, didn't seem to really have an excuse. All right, let's move on to race number 9 yesterday at Gulfstream Park. The 9th was the Grade 2 Fort Lauderdale. A couple of $100,000 for 3-year-olds and up, going 9 furlongs on the grass. And Chad had some competitive runners in here. I thought Channel Cat off of the triple-digit buyers may be the one to beat. Channel Cat is in the mix at the end and winds up third as the 2-1 favorite. And when I had Ron Nicoletti on yesterday, he mentioned Channel Cat is coming out of a string of a mile and a half races, cutting back to the mile and an eighth. Would he be at his optimum distance? As it turns out, he's in the mix, but runs third, a close-up third. Admission Office was a horse I had right underneath and thought was very dangerous. That one runs second. And the winner I had at the bottom of my mix, one of Chad's horses, Instilled Regard. Nice closing effort from the number 4 horse here, right in the mix of things. As I say, they hit the wire here with a real scrum, but it does wind up to be Instilled Regard. Irod Ortiz, Chad Brown, getting it done, coming off of a second-place finish most recently up at Aqueduct. That had been off a layoff since May, so obviously benefited from the fitness garnered up at Aqueduct early in November. And again, another win in a stakes race early in the championship meet at Gulfstream Park.
And the thing I love about those turf races, and any turf race, it's just the finishes are so exciting. You got the horses on the front end still looking like they got a little bit of run left, and then you saw in Silver Guard splitting horses in the mid stretch, and then you got the other Chad and Channel Cat flying late with
it's fun because at the eighth, well, there's six horses, so everybody's awesome. Feeling like, hey, I got a shot,
right,
here.
And you, if you're there live at the track, it's just kind of, yeah, everybody's yelling because everyone's got a different type of horse. It's very rarely a wire-to-wire dominant win on the grass, which makes it a lot of fun to watch. But I thought this was another horse that kind of got away with a gift for Chad Brown and Irad, but Channel Cat, as you said, a deserving favorite in there. So that was a really good race. The last couple of years, the Fort Lauderdale has been a very, very good race. And last year, you had Glorious Empire winning that race, and he came off a very good summer up at Saratoga, winning 2 great stakes. So the last couple of years, the Fort Lauderdale has been a very good race, and this was just another edition of it, as you just saw the finish there.
All right, and finally, let's take a look at the Harlan's Holiday Grade 3 event for three-year-olds and up on the main track going 8.5 furlongs. Unfortunately, Prince Lucky was vanned off from this race. We were looking before we went on the air to get an update. I didn't see anything from this morning getting update, but the horse was vanned off. Unfortunately, Prince Lucky, a winner of over $600,000, talented stakes performer. So we'll try to follow up and see and hope for the best. I thought Bodie Express was interesting coming out of the win over at Calder last time. Betting Public made that one the even money choice off of that race. Bodie Express, the number six, winds up third. However, War Story, number five. I have just never been able to jump on this horse's bandwagon. He's just hard to get behind, but he's one of those horses that on his day, he can run a nice race, and this was his day. He gets it done. Luis Saez on board, and War Story wins at 12-1 by a length and a half. Fat Man at 28-1 winds up running second in here. And again, Bodie Express third. But War Story, as I say, he's a horse that is like, I look and you look and you know this is a talented horse. But over the past two seasons, coming into yesterday's race, 13 starts, only two wins. But then you look overall, seven wins and 37 starts. And he was verging up, I guess, with yesterday's purse. He probably went over $3 million in earnings. So clearly it's a horse with some talent. As I say, I've just never been able to get behind him, but he looked pretty good yesterday.
No, I'm the same way. I've never been able to jump on War Story. And if I see him in a competitive race like this, I'm kind of have him in the bottom of my mix type of horse. And, you know, he's a horse that I, at the mile and a 16th, I don't always trust, but he got the job done there yesterday. But if I'm not mistaken, he won the Charlestown Classic twice and then ran well the third time. I don't remember on top of my head, but he's just a horse time and time again. I think the longer the better. Got the job done there and definitely had quick enough numbers to kind of run by and run his style. So I'm the same way. I've never been I'm on top of War Story in these type of races. But if you're a War Story fan, you got rewarded. And you get Luis Saez down in Florida paying almost $30. That rarely happens. A lot of good connections there, obviously. And it definitely helps you get Luis Saez. And again, if you're a fan of War Story, you definitely got rewarded there.
Yeah, we mentioned Jaramillo. And now we've also, in these stakes races, mentioned the Ortiz brothers, Luis Saez. This is a heck of a jockey colony this winter down there. John Velasquez down there, Julian Lepereau, Tyler Gaffalione, the aforementioned Jaramillo, Saez, Paco Lopez.
Paco's been riding well.
Yeah, who has just been red hot so far. So, again, it's going to be a fun winter meet down there at Gulfstream. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll do a little handicapping for today. We've gone in reverse. Now we'll look through the windshield. We'll do that. And then coming up in a few as well, Steve Bick will join us. Again, a little holiday gift guide suggestions. And we'll also get a little recap on the symposium out at the University of Arizona from earlier this week. All of that as Racing Across America continues. Stay tuned.
Wagering on horse racing just got a lot easier at Capital OTB with our newly designed state-of-the-art mobile wagering site. Everything you need is right here on one easy-to-navigate mobile platform. Set your favorite tracks, pick your horses, place your bets, all with a simple tap of the screen. Plus, you'll have access to Capital OTB TV for all our network programming. So log on to CapitalOTBBet.com and see just how easy wagering on horse racing can be.
Incredible destination to live, work, and play with easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport. It's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement. From world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
Here's some exciting news from Capital OTB. Capital Off-Track Betting and the Rivers Casino have partnered to bring you the finest experience in wagering on all your favorite thoroughbred and harness tracks from right inside the casino. Our newest location is open daily and can be found at Vance Flicks Bar, offering live tellers, self-serve betting terminals, racing information kiosks, and all the amenities you come to expect from Capital OTB. See you at the Rivers Casino in Schenectady.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. Seth Merrill and Sully Crotty. Let's do a little preview. Did a little review in the first segment, a little preview, give you some ideas for this afternoon. Let's both take a look at the New York Stallion Series from this afternoon. Yesterday it was the two-year-old boys. Today, the two-year-old girls. New York Stallion Series for $500,000. They will go 7 furlongs. It's race number 8 at Aqueduct. What did you see?
There's a big favorite in here, even money with Big Q. I don't want to take even money in these type of races, but I just don't see anyone beating Big Q in here. Broke the maiden at Saratoga at a very fair price, and earlier in the middle of the month of November, we came in for RAA, and we were talking about how Big Q, you got away with a 10-1 again. So she's a horse that, from what we've seen the first 4 starts, I thought they were pretty good. The Adirondack, you just completely toss out. I just don't see anybody beating Big Q in these type of spot or in this spot. I had to go on top here. I went with the first-time starter, the Terra Nova starter, Bank Sting. Bank Sting's at 15-1. Has been working well. I just think this is a horse that's most likely going to get to the lead this afternoon. And then the 9 and the 11 are probably the 2 speed horses in here. With the 7 as well, but I like that they're taking a shot in a stakes race in here. I use the other speed, the 7 in the 3rd spot, but the speed's been very good at Aqueduct on the main track throughout the fall and now the early stages of the winter, and then Time Limit as well. Had the lead last time out in the key sense, lost the Big Q. The pace will be hot enough to set up the race for Big Q in a stalking role. I didn't want to take the even money, but I just don't see anyone else kind of beating Big Q in this spot. I went 1-9-7-6.
I went 1-7-3-8, and it all comes down to you. Do you buy into that buyer last time for Big Q? If you do, nobody's going to get Big Q. But it is a little bit of an aberration. I just have said, and I continue to say, you know, lightly raced two-year-olds, even lightly raced three-year-olds, if they get a little bit of a break, they can come back and prove. This horse had a couple of months off after Saratoga and came back. It just seems potentially be improved. So I'm thinking that number probably legit. We'll find out more today. But off of that, it's hard to go past Big Q. If you wanted some alternatives, though, I thought Time Limit, the number 2 back was on the turf. But the number 4 back in the Seeking the Ante up at Saratoga, that's a pretty good number as compared to these. And so that may be an alternative to play around with. Manny Franco on board. So Time Limit to me, as I say, has the potential to be an alternative if you're shopping around for one in your picks or whatever. So for me, in the Aqueduct 8, the New York Stallion Series, 1-7-3-8. Sully's going to take a look at the 9th at Woodbine today, the valedictory. So the 9th, you're taking a look at one about halfway through their card.
Right, yeah, 16 races.
16 races today. The valedictory is a grade 3 event, $125,000 up for grabs for 3-year-olds and up, going 1.75 miles. Buckle in.
Yeah, these are always the fun races up in Toronto here, and it's Eureka Rosa da Silva's last racing day. He's retiring after today, and a great career there for da Silva, and especially up north. Even this meet, he's winning 25% of his starts and 730+. But he's on Pumpkin Rumble here today. I think it's going to be tough to beat Pumpkin Rumble. Pumpkin Rumble has just the Kevin Attard runners just has been very, very good this entire year, winning graded stakes races, ran in the Canadian International last time. They tried a little bit of a turf experiment there. Behind some very good horses, 2 back, the Alphabet Soup, the horse won, could have won by more than half a length and earlier in the summer. The horse actually ran well as well. In the close-up thirds against some deeper fields, a little bit better in here. Pumpkin Rumble was 8-1, I think, on Pennsylvania Derby Day. And got bet down to about 2-1 even money. So Pumpkin Rum is going to be tough to beat in here. It's nice to see Eureka Rosa da Silva kind of go out in the high end. So hopefully he can get some winners today in the 16 races. The 8 in the second spot for me is Fearsome. Fearsome coming over to Woodbine for the first time, coming out of a pretty good win from off the pace. And Woodbine's a place where it's tough to win on the lead, and Fearsome's a horse that has a really good closing kick. So I thought the effort was very good last time out, going a mile and a half to mile and three-fourths. Not going to be an issue there. And then the number 9 in the third spot. At 30-1, I'm going to use. This is a horse coming out of some very good races. 1-2 starts back at 6-1. Went off 66-1 last time out. And a horse that has ran well at Woodbine on the synthetic. Before going to Woodbine, ran in some stakes races out of town and actually was competitive in those spots. And the graded stakes, the non-graded stakes, and the Talum of the horse has been competitive earlier in the career. So above all names at 30-1, I'm going to use to complete the triple. But competitive field kind of runs through Pumpkin Rumble in here. And Eureka Rosa da Silva, 5-8-9-3 in the 9th at Woodbine. Seth's going to take a look at Remington. Remington's big card this afternoon. The 12th race this afternoon, it's the Springboard Mile. This is for two-year-olds, and it seems to be a really good field down at Remington.
Yeah, and this race over the years has produced some nice three-year-olds. You know, these are two-year-olds now, but in a few weeks they will be three-year-olds. And this race has been productive in some years, not so much in others. But, boy, you have a feeling with this field, there may be some horses worth paying attention to coming out of it. I went 10-9-3-4. Maximiliano for a Wesley Ward. Second in the career debut at the end of the Saratoga meet. Then went over to Keeneland and broke the maiden with a nice improved buyer number. Those were both sprints, 5.5 and 6 furlongs. Now stretches out in the third start. I just like the whole scenario. 5-1 on the morning line. I'm going to go in that direction. Obviously, giving up some experience to some of these others and stakes experience as well. But Maximiliano might be interesting. Shoplifted, clearly interesting for me. Broke the maiden at Saratoga early in the meet. And then a good second in the hopeful behind Basin. And then went out to Southern California and threw in a couple of duds. 5th in the American Pharoah. I liked him at 23-1 in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, with having had a race over the track already. Wound up 7th in there. But the Steve Asmussen decides to keep going for this year and try this race. I'm going to take a shot. Asmussen having a really good Remington meet. He's about 20 wins ahead of Carl Broberg as the meet wraps up. Rowdy Yates also for Asmussen, coming out of a nice stakes win. Last time right here at Remington. And Answer In, I actually debated about putting Answer In, you know, switching Answer In and Maximiliano. Answer In, similar scenario to Maximiliano. Couple of starts, broke the maiden with an improved effort. Both sprint races for Brad Cox. I think Answer In also in the third start of the career, stretching out, could be very, very intriguing. And Javier Castellano elects to come in and pick up the ride on Answer In. Fun race. It'll go off at about 9:20 tonight, our time, and we will offer it here at Capital OTB, the Springboard Mile from Remington. For me, 10-9-3-4. Finally, Sully's going to take a look at Fairgrounds, their race number 8, optional claimer, about 5.5 on the grass.
7-5-3-1 for me. I went with quick. A 10-1, Miguel Mena in here. This is a horse coming out of some good stakes races, ran in the winning colors at Churchill Downs. They're going to try the turf here for the first time, but connections okay going dirt to turf. They haven't won yet, but they've been competitive. And quick is a horse that has been competitive at Saratoga and at Keeneland, at Gulfstream Park with a couple wins. This is a horse that continuously hits the board. I'll see quick and run away with the turf experiment here on top. Change of control in the second spot. Going to be sitting in a stalking role. Last time out, ran well, coming out of two stakes races, including a second place finish. So there's a lot of speed in the turf race, obviously, with the sprint. Change of control is going to be sitting in a stalking role, getting a jump on some of the deeper closers. And then the 3 in here, probably the other speed. Last time out, ran okay, I thought, in an allowance race. Change of control was in that spot. The number 5 has some speed. We saw that 2 starts back winning at Canterbury. They tried Keeneland sprinting. Again, I didn't think it was a terrible effort, but now in a new barn here on a little bit of a layoff from October, 23% for that barn. I use Nova Azul, the other speed, in the third spot. At the Fairgrounds, race number 8, 7-5-3-1.
All right, we'll head to a break. When we come back, as promised, we'll be joined by Steve Bick. We'll have some holiday gift ideas, some books you may want to think about for the racing fan on your holiday gift list, and we'll also get a little recap. University of Arizona Symposium on Racing from earlier this week. Steve was on with the radio show. We'll talk about that as well. All of that right after this. Stay tuned.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Here in upstate New York, no one provides bettors with more wagering options than Capital OTB. Our network of ranch and easy bet locations stretches from the mid-Hudson Valley all the way to the Canadian border and west to central New York. So whether you need to place a bet, fund your Capital Bets account, or watch the next big race, all the action is just around the corner. A full list of our branch and easy bet locations can be found online at CapitalOTB.com. Capital OTB, the better and most convenient choice for wagering in upstate New York.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, we are joined now by Steve Bick. Steve, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Happy to have you on board. We'll talk a little holiday gift guide and get some book suggestions, something we've done. I don't know. I was thinking maybe not necessarily annually. Certainly it was annually when you were sitting in here with me, but it's been maybe a little more sporadic by the phone, but we'll do it this year. Before we do that, however, I did want to go back and talk a little symposium because you were there with the radio show. Great job, again, as usual. I was listening during the week and pulled up from your Twitter feed a shot. You were also at LaSalle last weekend. Had a shot of you and Privman, I think, Art Sherman there as well. And I wanted to ask you, I've been trying to get opinions from people. Did Bass, with the win last weekend, throw her hat in the ring for an Eclipse Award, getting her third grade one?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't see how good Jim can be, you know, overturned. Just one, what, the Bidens and the Breeders' Cup? No. But I think Bass made herself a finalist.
Yeah, okay. All right. So, yeah, okay. Yeah, she definitely gets, as I say, into the discussion, but does she get past the
No.
The,
no.
Yeah, the Breeders' Cup winner. Also, given that she was beaten by the Breeders' Cup winner. But three grade ones, that's a nice season these days for a two-year-old. No question about it.
Well, and the weird thing about the Starlet on Saturday, I had another really fun time at Lothal, which I really like. And Lothal deserves a lot of credit, Doc Allred and his team, for what they have really contributed to, you know, the Southern California racing circuit. And I pretty much have been, I think, what, five of the last six of these. And, of course, Bathurst is one of the big things continues to evolve. Since they moved the 30 to Lothal, Bathurst is the only person that's won them. He's won six straight. It's remarkable. And it was actually very cool to be there for Bathurst winning the five straight races that he did. And in fact, I said to him after the second win, when Message, Billy, who I had sort of forgotten about, when he won that allowance, I said to Bathurst, I said, "You could win five straight." And he said, "Don't say that. You're gonna jinx it." And then he proceeds to win the five straight. And I said to him at some point, "When have you ever done this before?" And he said, "One time at Prescott Downs, the quarter horse track in Arizona, he won five trials. But in terms of thoroughbred racing, it's something he's never done, and you wouldn't think that he would even get that many opportunities to saddle five straight winners, because it would have to be, you know, based on special weights, allowances, and stakes without a turf race in between. So a unique accomplishment that nobody seems to really make that much of, but I think, what, three of the five were not favored either. So it was a terrific accomplishment, and that 1,000 words was truly impressive winning the 30. He is a big, long body colt, and that I thought that was a very impressive win as he turned back Anno d'Or, and it was a great ride by Fabian Pratt, who made sure he got 1,000 words out a couple of pads late. So that he could see Anno d'Or. Because if he had kept him down by the rail after putting away the stablemate High Velocity, Anno d'Or would have won that race. So a good job by Pratt. And keep an eye on that horse that won the fifth of the five races for Stafford, the Odd, RA-AD. That was a very impressive rally. And that horse didn't really know what he was doing out there in his second career start. He's going to keep moving forward. Stafford is well stocked heading towards, you know, the opening of the Santa Anita meet.
Very good. Let's move on. After your stop over at LaSalle, you moved on, did the radio show for a few days from Arizona, University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. They put together the annual Racing Symposium, which is one of the more notable racing confabs during the year, and I just wanted a little overview. I pulled up again a couple of pictures from Twitter, and also we had a little video from one of the symposium conferences, but there are certainly some panels that were notable. The players panel with Marshall Graham, Pat Cummings, and Jonathan Kinchin. And then I was listening to you on the radio, and I guess you were in kind of a main area, and you noted, man, there is nobody here. It's like a ghost town. Why? Because while you were talking, Baffert and Pletcher had a panel, which I guess was very well attended. But give us a little overview of the Racing Symposium.
Well, for starters, the symposium itself is put together by the students, the Racetrack Industry Program, which has typically about 35 to 40, I won't say kids, because it's not just undergrad type. It's also who are looking to reignite their career in a new direction, and Arizona welcomes them. There's been, you know, quite a few in recent years. Joe Longo, who worked for NYRA, he was an accountant in his late 20s. He turned and went to Arizona. Keith Dinkel, who right now NYRA's racing secretary for the Aquatic meet, he another guy that changed his career path. Steve May, who's an official in Kentucky with the KHRC, who was in his 30s when he actually heard about the program on the show, on After Races, and decided to go and change the direction of his life. So it's an amazing place for students that are eager to get into the industry. They put the the whole thing together, and they do a tremendous job every year. And there's provocative discussion. I know people, certain critics think nothing ever comes out of these discussions, but they prompt ideas, they prompt discussion. The people that come and listen, they bring ideas back to their organizations, whether it's racetrack, the organization, ADW company, whatever capacity the attendees might be coming from. It's always good. I was pleased that I was asked to moderate the racetrack surface discussion. It was a two-parter. We had the first one was dirt with Anthony Peterson and with Glenn Kozak, and Dan Cruz is a noted racetrack installer. All disciplines, in fact, the thoroughbred harness, even Greyhound Park over the years. And we had, I thought, a really good discussion about, you know, the status of dirt and the, you know, the pressure it seemingly is under. And then the mad genius himself, Michael Dickinson, made a presentation for Tapita. And I don't even know why he has to make presentations or oversell the product. Everyone understands that the synthetic surface, and really Tapita is the one that has kind of won out in the synthetic trials over the last decade. There's no question it's a safer surface. It's a surface that results in fewer catastrophic injuries. No one's going to question that. The debate will continue, though, to be, is American main track racing, dirt is what American racing is, and it's a very difficult equation. So I thought our discussion was very provocative. You mentioned the horse player panel that Rick Emily moderated. They were very critical of racetrack organizations, their inability to listen to the consumer, the horse player. That one was strong. Baffert and Fletcher, kind of a back and forth about the industry. They actually created some headlines because Fletcher and Baffert were very accepting of the concept of LASIK. That brought a lot of attention. What else? There's always marketing concepts and the important topics of the day, the critical mass discussion about what can be done to improve prospects for the bull crop, and certainly regional breeding has a major place in here. New York and Pennsylvania were represented, Brian Campitello and Jeff Sinizzo, talking about the programs in Pennsylvania and New York, how that can contribute to the equine population. It's always a very enjoyable day, and the teacher and sometimes with people from all walks of the part of something big when you attend the symposium.
Yeah, it was the coverage of it was very good. Your coverage is good, then Ritz and Matt Haggerty as well. It seemed like some of the panels, as they say, were at least, as you noted, provoking discussion. I would get people to go back and listen to the radio show, too, pull up the archives. You talked to Michael Dickinson, and you had some nice discussions. Hamerly was sitting in with you, and you had some discussions yourself on LASIK and whatnot that were very intriguing as well, so people can pull those up via the archive. All right, let's move on, though. Again, annually, give out some ideas for folks that may have a horse racing fan on their gift list, some book ideas, and we'll kind of go through them one at a time here and get some of your thoughts. First up, we'll take a look at the Sir Barton book that was authored by Jennifer Kelly. Your thoughts on Sir Barton?
Well, Jennifer Kelly came to racing from a new angle. I mean, he is a client started considering this in Alabama. It's pretty remarkable that, somehow found the horse racing history, and it's now become a passion of hers. Did extensive research, 3-4 years of research, and considerable time close to the country, and you know, finding things that are new to the Spartan story. And of course, you know, Spartan is sort of the forgotten Triple Crown winner. And when he did it, it wasn't a thing. It wasn't until 1930, I can't go and talk, that the whole idea of a Triple Crown started to crystallize. And so I think a lot of the information that she put together in Sir Barton and the mention of Triple Crown, I think it's been strong. He really is an interesting horse. And of course, Commander Ross involved here is younger. There's a lot of really good, you know, first half of the book information that came to light in Jennifer's book. And now trying to figure out what she's going to do next. But Sir Barton, if you haven't had a chance to get it, make your move. I think you'll really enjoy it.
Next up, I heard the morning you on the radio show, you had the folks behind this one, and I've been meaning to pick it up because the conversation just intrigued me. That's Better Lucky Than Good, subtitled The Tall Tales and Straight Talk from the Backside of the Track, produced by the Louisville Story Program. And as I say, when I listened to the interview on your radio show, I said, I got to get this one.
This is the $20 very well spent. And the Louisville Story Program is basically compiling all of this on a variety of subjects from neighborhoods and from things all around the Ville. This book, this will move you and will educate you. I can't even adequately prepare people for what they'll experience as they read one story after another. It is stunning, the achievement of this and the importance of it, from women of all ages and all backgrounds of different theories, to people that you whose names came, whether it's trainers or Bert Blair, the long time. Superintendent who actually had retired and is now going to become the track super at Kentucky Downs, actually. Not that that's, you know, a big year-round full-time job, but you will be absolutely mesmerized by this. I cannot recommend it highly enough. It's only $20. Google Story Program .org as opposed to .com, but either way, just put in Google Story Project or Better Lucky Than Good, and I'm telling you, you will not put it down. It is a triumph.
Yeah, as I say, when I was listening to the interview with the representative from the folks behind it on your radio show, I said I got to get that one, so that's on my list certainly. Of course, can't get through a book list without talking a little Lenny Shulman. Lenny Shulman with the Justify book.
Absolutely, Lenny was particularly the beginning of the Justify story, and as it happened, Lenny did a very nice piece on the that year that Justify was coming out years ago, and he came out to Santa Anita. I was there for the Big Cap, and that weekend. I might have even been there in February. I guess it was the second start of Justify's career. Was that Sunday? Yeah, after. That must have been. And so Baffert, Lenny was going to do a thing on Baffert too. And Baffert says to Lenny, you want to come see the Derby winner? And he certainly didn't think that it was going to be Justify that he was going to be introduced to. He thought Baffert was going to show him McKenzie. So Baffert brings him over to Justify stall. And like, this is the maiden winner, right? He said, yeah, he's going to win the Derby. If he wins tomorrow, if he wins Sunday, meaning the allowance race, he'll win the Derby. I mean, you couldn't be more front row for it. And so Lenny basically latched on from that point and has got things that nobody else has in justify scoring. Really, really good.
Yeah, had great access, and we've talked about this on the Saratoga show with Lenny as well, but want to push it this time of year again for folks that may have on their list. Another one we talked about this summer up at Saratoga, and again, our friends Brian Boyer and Mike Veach put together the history of the Travers, and as I say, we pushed that already this summer, but given it's focused on the Travers, you would think that would be a popular item for gifts for racing fans around our area.
This is so much fun, and it's one of those books that you put on the coffee table, and every so often you just pick it up and you thumb through, and you pick a specific Travers year, particularly if, you know, there's years that none of us really are as familiar with as we are the ones we've attended, and it just, it's just captivating. It's beautifully done. It's a real must-have, and you know, certainly as a gift. It's a natural, and obviously you see the image on the front cover, which is Frank Montgomery, who we should talk about too. And this was one of my favorite things. I went to the museum, and both Michael and Brian signed it for me when they were doing that session. So it's something I'll really thank.
And, we're looking at the cover of the book right now. And as you say, Greg Montgomery, and we pulled up a couple of posters. Folks, go to Greg Montgomery's website. He does great work, and you can get your own Travers posters, which, of course, that's his signature kind of a deal. He puts together the nice Travers posters. We've got to look at the one from 1987 and the 2008 poster as well with Street Sense. So those would be great ideas also.
Well, and I thought include this because Greg Montgomery is such a talent, and his art when it comes to Saratoga, it's just synonymous. That happens to be my favorite. It's called Pinnacle. It was really the first year the image of the grandstand. That was really the first year. The Street Sense, the Grasshopper image is also a favorite of mine. I had Carl Nassar and Eden Bill sign it. This year during Derby, I've never framed it, but it's one of my favorites. Certainly one of my favorite Travers. But I've got quite a few signatures actually. I've got the Birdstone one, the Purple Sky. I got Nick Zito to sign that. Greg's work is just unbelievable. And again, this would be a great gift. They're typically about $50 the places. Then the ones that are older that are out of print. They've accrued in value. So it's the most, you know, even though it's just graphic art and lithos, they've accrued in value. And that first one, the most famous original image of those silks that Greg did, that is worth $3,000.
Oh,
yeah.
That's incredible. We've done that too. A few years ago, Mick here at the Capital OTV, one of our behind-the-scenes guys, took one of the posters and had our guests as they came through sign it. So we've got a couple of those. I think there's one in the front of the clubhouse racebook, in fact, with a bunch of signatures on it. So that's a great idea. That's maybe for next Christmas. Buy your poster, stand outside the jockey's room this summer, get a bunch of autographs, and then you got a really good gift to pass to somebody. All right, let's get back to the books. Out of the Clouds, the subtitle on this one, The Unlikely Horseman and Unwanted Colt Who Conquered the Sport of Kings.
Well, this is the Steinman and Karen and Roger, the authors. They did the most recent film, Abadar. Wonderful. And Out of the Clouds was a huge hit. This is from early in the year. And between Hirsch and Jacobs and Steinman, you know, this is a story that should really be more widely told. And for those that haven't read Out of the Clouds yet, I know it was a finalist for the Dr. Ryan Book Award, I'm not sure who actually ended up winning the Dr. Ryan Award. I know it was a finalist. It came early in the year for me. I did not actually get a chance to have Linda or David on the show, like I did for the affirmed Aladar book. This is terrific. And you'll read it. I mean, it's probably 200 pages and change, but you'll read it in 2 minutes. I mean, it It's a real page turner. And if you don't know the time he's scoring, you'll really be captivated.
Let's move on to Around Kentucky with the Bug, and that one written by Patrick Gilligan.
Well, this is Jack Gilligan's father, and it's a terrific tale. And I've forgotten about this until I tried to figure out what books to offer people, and this was very much heralded and received. I think it won an award from somebody. But Patrick Gilligan is bringing Jack around, introducing him around and getting him started as establishing himself in the United States. Really good. The book actually it may have come out as early as late 2017 or early last year, because I had forgotten about it. But I would recommend this highly, because they're Irish and they're kind of wide-eyed. They had the fascinating experiences coming and traversing the country as Pat tried to get Jack established. Really good.
This one's kind of interesting. Taking Shergar, again, subtitle Thoroughbred Racing's Most Famous Cold Case. And when you sent this as a title to talk about, I started thinking, I wonder if there are a lot of people in the audience who aren't familiar with this. And that then made me think, when did it happen exactly? And I went back and looked, this is almost 35 years old now, this Shergar story.
Well, the Shergar story is one of the great unsolved mysteries in racing history. And that's what Bill Tobey was basically setting out to re-examine. And there's been many, many attempts to figure out what transpired in terms of the kidnapping of Shergar, and then basically his killing, and he was disappeared essentially, and there was speculation about the Irish Republican Army, and it's an amazing even if you read other Shergar treatments. Bill, who does tremendous work and probably got 15 titles to his credit. And, of course, Bill Tobey also does some terrific things about racing law and equine law and equine tax code. It's a tremendous resource, Bill Tobey. So look at his other titles. But one of the best parts of the discussion we had was, Bill essentially finding out some things and talking to some people who had not previously really gone on record with their thoughts about the kidnapping of Shergar. So read it again for the first time.
Yeah, and again, if folks aren't familiar, I mean, we're talking about a horse, and I'm just looking at the record here, owned by the Aga Khan, won the Epsom Derby in 81, the Irish Derby in 81, and then in 83, he's kidnapped, and essentially, it is still to this day an unsolved mystery. Finally, let's take a look at Spectacular Bid, the Spectacular Bid book, and this one's interesting to me as well. It's Spectacular Bid, subtitled The Last Super Horse of the 20th Century, but it's interesting to me as well for the cover photo. This brings back memories also. Night racing at the Meadowlands. It's got to be what the Young America or the Meadowlands Cup. But again, there are probably folks out in the audience who don't remember that.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. And I was just starting to become interested in racing seriously. And that whole period, 77, 78, 79, is really part of a golden era and a spectacular decade for the sport. And Peter Lee, Peter also is a guy that I did not get a chance to talk to, but I did receive a copy of Spectacular Bid from the publisher. And for those that don't know Spectacular Bid, the ins and outs, I mean, people only know the quote, the best horse to look through a bridle and pin, Ronnie. I mean, there's certain parts of the Spectacular Bid story that are familiar, but I think a lot of the origin of Spectacular Bid and the way things unfolded the way they did, I think will be new to a lot of people. And this is one of the horses and one of the stories in racing when it comes to failed attempts at the Triple Crown. When people say, you know, who should have won the Triple Crown that didn't, Spectacular Bid is at the top of that list, undoubtedly. And, you know, really an all-time great that, for whatever reason, doesn't seem to necessarily get the credit that he's due. And Peter Lee, really, I thought, did a real service to Spectacular Bid's legacy with this book.
Steve, a great list. Appreciate the taking the time to put that together, and hopefully we gave people some good ideas. I certainly think so. As I say, there's a couple on here that I'm definitely going to put on my own personal list, or maybe I can spread them to people who are looking for gifts for me. Now there's an idea. But appreciate the thoughts, and also appreciate the thoughts on the symposium. As I say, people can go back and pick up the archives while you were out there as well, because you had some great conversations with some of the players. Yeah,
the Baffert, the 45 minutes with Baffert on Wednesday before he went on stage with Todd, it should not be missed. He was unbelievable. He told the early day stories as a quarter horse trainer, and then he talked about his first purchase at Keeneland. Which I won't spoil. If you hear it, you'll really enjoy it, about how he spent $30,000, even though he only had a budget of $20,000, and what ended up happening. I always have good conversations with Baffert. He's one of the great interviews, obviously, in the sport. But when he starts talking about history and his, you know, his background, it's really enjoyable. He talks about when he first got stalls at Los Al and first tried to make a move into the big time. That was really the most special conversation we had at Tucson this week. Really, that one is already up on our best of page.
Yeah, listen live, obviously, SiriusXM from 9 to noon every day. You can also catch it here. We have the replay the next day here on the network in the morning, typically, and stevebick.com to catch the archives. So go back and look at those. And we just showed the shot of Baffert and Pletcher at their seminar, and they're both graduates. And our man locally, Alex Sauceville, we've had him on the show a couple of times. He was a heck of a hoop player at Scotia, and he's out there as part of the RTIP program as well. It's a great way to get into the industry if anybody's out there kind of contemplating that. Not only if you're a kid thinking about college, but if you've already graduated from college and you're thinking, maybe I want to move on and get into the racing industry. I know a lot of the students out there are getting second degrees out there.
Well, in fact, Alex, I did see, I guess today's, it's got to be either last night or Friday night, he put up a tweet, my last night in Tucson, and he's graduating. There's quite a few kids who finished their program this year. I had Alex on the show last year, and then again this year with Hammer. You know, Rick Hammerly taught some classes. The late Liz Bracken, who people in New York certainly will remember from her time at NYRA, a longtime simulcast director. Negotiated the contracts association, and then when she left NYRA, went out to Arizona, essentially to kind of semi-retire, and was instrumental in helping so many graduates the last, I'm going to say, 9-10 years, and she had cancer got to be 5-6 weeks ago, and Rick Hammerly had been brought in to take her classes this semester, and a great experience for Rick, but he had Alex with him one Friday, and we had Alex on the show. He also led the taco bus tour on Monday night. We had a Brian tromping around Tucson, stopping at notable taco stands, and the town is...
I heard you on the radio, and you were talking about the taco tour. And then the conversation progressed, and you said, if for some reason, gee, I had trouble getting to sleep at night. And I'm thinking, well, that's the taco tour. And as we were watching the Eagles, I thought that the having trouble getting to sleep was going to tie back into the top. Maybe it did in some other.
No, no, it's strictly was we were watching the Eagles game going on as we were on the bus. And so I'm watching on the phone, and Hammer needed the Eagles to cover for a weekend parlay, and so we were doing that simultaneously. But I had never really gone downtown in time, and really cool, the Congress Hotel, famously Dillinger, was holed up, and there was a fire in the hotel, and somebody recognized Dillinger, one of the firemen. And they ended up capturing him later. He escaped. But I got to see the Congress Hotel downtown. For people that like us that live on the East Coast and grew up on the Northeast, going to Arizona is always an amazing experience. It's like a moonscape, with the buttes and those expanses, the desert. I love driving from Phoenix to Tucson and then back to Phoenix. Later on, I also stopped in Chandler, where Dean and I inadvertently ran into the tumbleweed Christmas tree several years ago. On our first trip, there was something going on when we checked into the hotel in Chandler. What's going on? They said, "Oh well, tomorrow night it's the lighting of the tumbleweed tree." And since the 50s, they've been making this giant, spray painted white Christmas tree out of tumbleweed. And then they have this Christmas parade, and it's a riot. So every year now, when I go to the symposium, I drive to Chandler on the way in or the way back, and I should have sent you a picture of me with the tumbleweed tree.
Absolutely, the Southwest version of the lighted the parade up in Greenwich, the lighted
Holiday parade, which you miss every year. You promise you're going to
next year. I'm definitely. It went before Thanksgiving. I thought it was sometime between Thanksgiving, but next year I'm definitely making it.
All right,
Steve. Absolutely. Again, appreciate the visit. I'm sure I'll talk to you on the radio side, but not here on the TV side before Christmas and the holidays. So wish you and yours, you and Tina, a very happy holiday.
Well, thank you and Sully. All the listeners in the Capital Region, warm wishes for Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, happy, healthy New Year for the challenging year for the game, and let's make 2020 a year we can really enjoy from start to finish.
I like it, Steve. Thanks a lot. We'll talk again.
Thanks,
Steve Bick. Again, SiriusXM at the races. You can listen live if you have that in the car or in the house, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Catch the archives at cbic.com. We play the replays here on the network in the morning. And, again, there was some really nice interviews last week out in Arizona at the symposium. So you can pull those up as well. All right. We've gone overtime. However, Naira is kind of back to Andy seemed to indicate what I was anticipating. It looks like they'll probably shoot for 12:30 now for a while with the post time. And Andy kind of indicated that, which means that the pregame show will come on 11:30 or so. So Racing Across America, we're in a good spot now where we can kind of go overtime a little bit. But hopefully we gave some ideas out there for some nice racing books. If you have some folks, again, who are racing fans that are on your list. And as I say, there are at least a couple in there that are intriguing to me that I will, as I say, I may have to hint some people about a couple of those books. Sully, appreciate the thoughts this morning. Also, not only on the recap from yesterday with some good race. That was really the first first real championship meet type of day. At last week with the Claiming Crown and the Caribbean Classic, fun weekend.
Right.
Both the stakes races. These will clearly lead into potentially some of the races Pegasus Day, you would think.
Right. That's kind of what you think of. Championship meet does start a little earlier, a couple of weeks ago, but when you get to Fort Lauderdale, and a lot of the trainers and jockeys go down south, leave New York. I kind of think the champions meet starts the day after the Cigar Mile, because we have all of our guys up in New York still. We still have turf racing in New York, and then they all go to New York down to Florida after that. So Jockey Colony is just going to get better and better. The trainers and the horses just going to get better and better. So a lot of good stuff to look
forward
to.
Speaking of trainers, I don't know if you read the Dave Greinig article. I had him on the show yesterday and talked with him a little bit about it. He had an article. If you didn't hear Dave yesterday, go pull up the article on the Racing Form. And again, I mentioned with Dave yesterday, if folks aren't aware, a month and a half or so ago, the Racing Form went back to free articles. So you can read the articles now for free. But Kieran is heading out of town for the winter and not leaving any horses in New York, Kieran McLaughlin, mm-hmm. and he doesn't know he's coming back to New York or not. Just because the kind of the workers' comp rules and regulations, he was one of this group of trainers that the labor folks looked and fined a number of people. And they've all kind of said, gee, the tracks are in different counties and they all have different rules and we're trying to do our best. And he just kind of felt like it's kind of an onerous situation and he doesn't know whether he's going to come back, which a guy like him, a good guy, he's a good guy, great trainer, and a guy like him says, I don't know if they're going to come back. I don't know, that doesn't...
Yeah, that kind of hurts New York a little bit.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll keep our eyes on that. Again, he hasn't decided firmly one way or the other, but as I say, you can read the Dave Greinig article. Sully, we'll wrap things up now. Appreciate the thoughts. Good luck to you.
Good luck to you.
And good luck to all of you. I'll be back in about an hour with OTB Live. We'll see you then.
A service of Capital Off-Track Betting.
And of course, that $700,000 guarantee in the Rainbow Six sounds pretty appealing.
Yes, 43-20, 48-60.
43-20. Yeah, we kept it at the magic number, that's for sure. Jason and I were talking off camera on the break about this